Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
92.9 Podcasts, powered by Action 24/7. Tennessee's only local legal sportsbook. Bet now at action247.com. 92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station the children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
I'm here. My name is Gary Parish, speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Ben Adol's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day best you can.
Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding
rings. Hope you paid attention to Dinner to Go yesterday, where Big Ben and I laid out a perfect plan to take advantage of the uncertain availability of Ja Morant. When we were going off the air, still was not confirmed that Ja would play against the Denver Nuggets last night. So Denver, led by the reigning MVP, was listed as a one-point favorite. Bennett expressed some hesitation about jumping on the grid.
I was a little nervous.
Man just lost his Ray-Bans less than 24 hours ago. Been a rough stretch. Which point I suggested, Big Bet Bennett, there's no scenario where Ja Morant's not playing after his team was embarrassed inside FedEx Forum just two nights earlier. Ja Morant will play. When that happens, when it is announced, the line will flip. So we're getting value right now at taking Grizzlies plus one. Let's take Grizzlies plus one, max bet, and believe in Ja Morant. So that's what we did. That's what I did. Is it what you did?
Well, no.
What?
I know.
What?
I know.
It's what I did. And then, of course, Ja Morant was confirmed to be in the starting lineup. The line went to Grizzlies minus two, but we had value. Easy cover. Grizzlies win last night to improve to 4-3. We'll talk about it momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. Joe Sheehan's going to join me in the next segment right around 4:20. Longtime baseball writer. Game six of the World Series is tonight. Braves and Astros down in Houston at Minute Maid Park. Joe Sheehan going to talk about it with me in the next segment. When I finish that, I'll take a break, come back, do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point I'll discuss four previously undiscussed stories, among them Wild Night on Twitter last night. The pole assassin, who is a stripper, who is dating Jeff Banks, the special teams coach at the University of Texas, defended herself amid allegations that her pet monkey seriously injured a trick-or-treater on Sunday night. A lot going on here. Interesting situation. This dude, Jeff Banks, was considered a candidate to be the next head coach at Washington State. Can't imagine he's still a candidate, though, because Wazoo, think, just cannot hire a man who allegedly left his family for a stripper whose pet monkey just seriously injured a small child. Probably a deal breaker. We'll discuss around 4:44. The initial college football playoff rankings will debut tonight. Will Cincinnati make the top four? We'll get into that a little later on this hour. The Athletic is conducting a Heisman Trophy straw poll. Kenneth Walker III, who is from the Memphis area, is a runaway leader right now. I'll give the details on that just before 5 o'clock in a tragic situation in Las Vegas early this morning. Henry Ruggs, the former Alabama receiver, current Raiders star, hit a vehicle from behind that subsequently burst into flames. A person in that vehicle died. Ruggs allegedly showed signs of impairment. He is expected to be charged with felony DUI resulting in death. That's a minimum 2 years in prison, possibly 20 if convicted. I'll tell you more about it during Four Notable Stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins. Just like always, then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I did want to start with the NBA because the Grizzlies played their 7th game of the season last night inside FedEx Forum, and I hope you listen to Dinner to Go because I was trying to share credit with Big Bet Bennett and say that Big Bet Bennett and I developed a plan to take advantage of Ja Morant's uncertain availability, and our plan subsequently worked perfectly. But come to find out, truth is, I'm the one that devised the plan. Big Bet Bennett had nothing to do with it, and he didn't even believe in my plan because he did not take advantage of that moment when Denver was a one-point favorite, the Grizzlies a one-point underdog, as Ja Morant was still labeled as questionable after taking a fall on Saturday night. He was dealing with some soreness, according to head coach Taylor Jenkins. So Big Bet Bennett, he expressed some hesitation about following the Grizzlies, and in hopes that they would snap, I guess what was a one-game losing streak, which isn't really a streak at all. But I said, no, Big Bet Bennett, you're not thinking this through well enough. Ja Morant is going to play. He's got too much heart. He's too much of a leader. He might be sore, but he'll be on that court. And when it is announced that he's going to be in the starting lineup, that number is going to flip. Denver will no longer be a one-point favorite. The Grizzlies will be favored. You max bet it now, you get Grizz plus one. You're going to get value because everybody else tries to take it a little closer to tip-off after Ja Morant's in the starting lineup. They're going to get something like Grizz minus two. So before I even left the studio last night, I said it's time to max bet Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies. Grizzlies plus one. And I just assumed you did it too. I thought we'd left here on the same page. Come to find out, live on the radio moments ago, you didn't believe like I believed.
You know, I've lost a lot over the past 48 hours. My Ray-Bans.
Your aviators.
Derrick Henry.
Lost Derrick Henry.
I've lost a lot. I couldn't bear to lose anymore last night. I just couldn't. It was just not going to happen. I just had to sit last night out.
You know what? That's actually, and this goes for any of you out there, that is, with all due respect to FanDuel.
We love you, FanDuel.
Can't tell you how much I love FanDuel. My paychecks just jump because of FanDuel. So with all due respect to FanDuel, it's okay to take a night off every once in a while.
That was beaten down.
It's okay to take a week off every once in a while.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
But you got to get back in the game at some point.
I'll get back in tonight.
Well, I was in the game last night. I locked in Grizzlies plus one. And that cash is a winner because the Grizzlies, I don't know about cruised, but controlled a game, mostly from start to finish, and won at 106-97. Ja Morant, as predicted, was in the starting lineup. Played 35 minutes. He was 12 of 22 from the field. 26 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, 8 assists and 7 rebounds. And this isn't a unique thought to me. I've heard other people say it. But if we reach the point where Ja Morant in a whatever game is above 50% from the field and getting 26 points, that is further evidence that he has taken that leap.
No question. Yeah, no. It was funny because you like see that stat line last night and you're like, oh, whoa, he had a really good game. But you watch it and you're like, he had a pretty good game.
He had a fine game. Yeah, like it wasn't because there weren't, like, you know, we've lived through Ja Morant games this season already where there's blocks above the square and
right.
And you know, going and getting lobs that most humans can't get, and these spectacular highlights. And there were highlights last night, but nothing that'll end up on the end-of-the-year highlight Ja Morant reel.
Right.
And there was never a moment where you were like, ooh, Ja Morant's taking over this game. Oh, boy, look at what Ja Morant's doing right now. There's been multiple times this season already, even though the Grizzlies aren't on national television often, there's been multiple times this season already where it feels like the entire NBA Twitter world is tweeting about John Morant and things that he is doing. Wasn't really the case last night. But then it's over with, and it's like 26 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds. That's what superstars do. They go and get big box scores even when they aren't having what feels like massive games. And that's where he's at right now. He's going to go out and get 35, 37, 40 every once in a while. Those are going to be fun. But when he can quietly, relatively speaking, quietly go get 26, 8, and 7 in a victory over a good Denver team led by the reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic, well, then that's another sign that he has taken the leap. You know, when Zach Kleiman or anybody else in the preseason said, I believe John Morant's going to be an all-star this season, just you wait, it was all something we like to hear, and I think most of us believed it. But were you sure of it? I think I put it at around 50-50, because it's hard to be an NBA all-star. But, like, is there any doubt anymore that he's going to be an all-star?
Not to me. I mean, barring injury, knock on wood, like, I just don't see how that's possible.
Barring injury or the team just stops winning games.
Sure.
Because team success plays a role in whether you're an all-star.
Yes.
But as long as the Grizzlies hover around 500, obviously, hopefully better than that, but they're probably going to be within 4 or 5 games of 500 most of this season. That's the truth. That's certainly what the computers project. And as long as they're, you know, hovering around 500, I don't think there's any way, given the level at which he seems capable of producing consistently and the amount of attention he's getting, I don't think there's any way he's not going to be an all-star. Like, as I was leaving the house this afternoon, you know, I've always got televisions on. They're always muted. I keep, like, 3 TVs on at my desk all day long, muted, all of them, because I'm working. But every once in a while, I'll see something, and I'll go, okay, now I should listen to this, either because it interests me or it might be useful for the radio show. So I've got 1 TV on, you know, SportsCenter today, and another one on CBS Sports Network, and another one on cable news. And so I see Heather Dinich pop up. She's talking about the college football playoff rankings. I see, okay, unmute. Let's hear what Heather has to say, because I'm going to have to talk about this later, and she might say something I can borrow. I say all that to say that when I was leaving the house, Jalen and Jacoby were on one screen, muted, and they were going to break, and the graphic that popped up teasing the next segment was, how big of a problem are Ja Morant and the Grizzlies in the West? Before they came back from commercial, I had to get in my car and drive, and I didn't feel like going through all the trouble to stream it. But my point is, national television shows are teasing segments about Ja Morant and the Grizzlies. Last week on ESPN's new afternoon NBA show, it was like, who would you start a franchise with, LaMelo Ball or John Morant? Today, on a different but also nationally televised show, it was, how big of a problem are John Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies? They're getting, I think, an unprecedented amount of attention right now, probably in franchise history, outside of, you know, the playoffs when they're up on the Warriors in a 7-game series or something like that. I don't think the Grizzlies have ever consistently gotten this much attention in the regular season from NBA media outside of this market.
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't think there's any doubt no Grizzlies player has ever gotten this much attention as John Morant is getting. He was in studio with ESPN just last week. And so when you combine the production with the attention, with team success, it seems very likely, bordering on guaranteed, that he is going to be an all-star at the age of 22 in his third season in the NBA. And last night was the latest bit of evidence that underlines that. He wasn't spectacular. He didn't have an all-time great John Morant game. It was just felt like a John Morant game at this point. And it was still 26 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, 12 of 22 from the field, 35 minutes on the court, even though an hour before the game, at least publicly, it was unclear whether he would play. So that was the good. And I think also if you were trying to put something in a category of good, you could start with Jaren Jackson Jr., came out, made his first shot, and finished 4 of 7 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3, 11 points, 4 rebounds, and a block. And I couldn't help but notice in the halftime interview that Rob Fisher conducts with an assistant coach every game, the first thing that was said was it was nice to see Jaren come out and make that first shot. He's had a rough night the other night. It was like sometimes things go unspoken, and other times you can tell when people are really trying to pick somebody up. And whether it was his teammates or the coaching staff, when there was something good to say about Jaren Jackson Jr., they were anxious to say it. I think because they know he needs to hear it, because it has been a rough go. And so last night he made shots. That's good. The bad is he only played 18 minutes. And some of that's not his fault, because unless you foul out, when a coach pulls you for quote-unquote foul trouble, that's on the coaching staff. I'm not saying it was a mistake, but you see it way more in college than you see it in the NBA. But it happened to Jaren last night. You pull somebody because of perceived foul trouble. You limit the amount of time they're on the court. And then they don't foul out of the game, which means you didn't use that player as much as you probably would have used him under different circumstances. Last night, Jaren got pulled from the game when he picked up his fifth foul, and he ultimately only played 18 minutes. And though this had not been a big problem this season, the bigger problem certainly being an atrocious two-point field goal percentage, which, by the way, didn't get much better last night because, again, 4-7 from the field, but just 1 of 3 inside the arc. Told you yesterday he was shooting around 33% on two-pointers, which ranked 133rd out of 136 qualified players who are averaging at least 5 two-point field goal attempts per game. 133 out of 136. That's awful. Well, it didn't get any better last night. Again, he was just one of three from inside the arc. That's been a big problem this season. The three-point percentage, also not great. Although there's reason to think that can get better, and last night he showed that 3 of 4 from beyond the arc. Those have been the biggest problems. But a problem throughout his career, and not just in the NBA, but also at Michigan State in that one year, has been his inability to avoid fouls. And in lots of cases, stupid fouls. And that was on display again last night. And as Jeff and Chris Harrington were talking about earlier today, you know, after the game, you know, John Morant, when asked about Jaren, was like, we know what he can do when he's on the court. As Chris picked up on, and I thought this was an important thing to pick up on, we've now gone from we know what Jaren Jackson Jr. can do when he's healthy to we know what Jaren Jackson Jr. can do when he's on the court.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just enough to be healthy. You have to be on the court. Because if you're healthy and not in the game, it really ain't no different than being hurt.
No, it's true. And I don't, like, you know, it's been going on for a while now. I don't know, like, what, I mean, the right answer is to just say stop making stupid fouls. But
if it were that easy, he would have already done it.
He would have already done it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know what makes people unnecessarily run through screens and pick up fouls. what makes front court players pick up fouls on non-shooters, you know, 30 feet from the basket. I don't know what makes somebody do that. I just know that it's been a problem with him. His foul rate in college wasn't good. His foul rate in the NBA has not been good. And last night, again, he picked up five in just 18 minutes. And as we talked about yesterday, it's obviously preferable that Jaren Jackson Jr. plays well when he's on the court. But even when he's not playing well, it's important that he's on the court because of the spacing he provides for Ja Morant. The Grizzlies are better with Jaren Jackson Jr. on the court, even when he's not playing well. Ja Morant is better when Jaren Jackson Jr. is on the court, even when Jaren Jackson Jr. is not playing well. And so you need him on the court. And there's two things that can keep him off the court. Injuries, which we've dealt with, and foul trouble, which we've dealt with as recently as last night. Got to clean that up. But it was a, I think, collectively, a step in the right direction. Because he went 0 of 8 from 3 the other night and had a pretty dismal performance. This time, he had limited minutes because of stupid fouls. But 4-7 from the field, 3-4 from three-point range. Back in double digits in points. We'll call that a plus. I'll talk more about it with Jeff Calkins when he joins me a little after 5 o'clock. When we come back, turn our attention to baseball. Game 6 World Series Astro Braves tonight down at Minute Maid Park. Joe Sheehan's going to join me. You're listening to The Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
The initial college football playoff rankings will debut tonight on ESPN. Will Cincinnati make the top four? We'll get into that in the next segment. Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, but right now, covers baseball, writes the Joe Sheehan newsletter. You can subscribe to it at joesheehan.com. I'm a subscriber. If you want to be smart about the sport, you should be too. It's Joe Sheehan. Please make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview, presented by The Wing Guru, online at thewingguru.com.
So Joe, I mentioned the newsletter. I read today's where you highlight how in baseball history, There's just about nothing better than Game 6. And tonight we get Game 6, Braves-Houston, down at Minute Maid Park. So to start, just expand on that thought, why Game 6s are a pretty special thing in the history of this sport.
Yeah, I think, you know, Game 7's those magic words, right? Somebody's going to win tonight. But when you look at the history of baseball, Game 6 is where you actually have all of these incredible historical moments. You know, think about David Freese back in 11. Joe Carter, that World Series winning home run, that was a Game 6. Reggie Jackson hit three homers, that was a Game 6. If you go back, there's actually been more great moments in Game 6s in baseball history than Game 7. And I actually like the tension of Game 6, too, because, you know, you go into Game 7, you know it's going to end. One way or another, tonight we're going to have a champion. In Game 6, hey, I don't know. So is the team going to extend it? Are we going to see a clinch tonight, a dog pile? There's that tension in a Game 6 that doesn't exist in a Game 7. So I like them. I think baseball history indicates that, you know, there's just more history in the Game 6. So I'm really excited.
Before we look ahead to tonight, let's look back. The Braves were up 3-1 in this series. They're up 4-0 in Game 5. They're at home. Obviously a great situation to be in, and then they squandered it. What happened? And is the way Brian Snitker handled Tucker Davis, is that among the issues?
I don't like that he left Davidson in as long as he could. He was up 4-0 in the second. Davidson had pitched to the three left-handed hitters in that Astros lineup. I think at that point you try to step on the Astros' necks, right? You got two on. I think letting him pitch to all those right-handed batters was the point at which, if the Braves go on to lose this series, that's going to be where we look and say that's where they lost it. I just think it was, instead of thinking I can step on their necks, he was thinking about, maybe I can hold back my relievers, maybe I can get some extra outs out of Davidson. Look, nothing against Tucker Davidson, but he's got five major league starts under his belt. He hadn't pitched in the majors since the middle of June. I think getting four outs out of him was a gift, and getting him out of that game with a 4-0 lead should have been a gift. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes the next 2 days. But that feels to me like the hinge point in this series, where the Braves had them down and let them get up.
You're way better with the history of Major League Baseball than I am, but just on a surface level, we've watched some super inexperienced guys start World Series games over the past couple of weeks. How unusual, if at all, is this?
It's becoming a little more usual as teams build their playoff rosters, not so much based on who was with them all season, but on who can help us win right now. So to take Dylan Lee, who started Game 4 the other day, you know, the Braves, he was a good reliever at AAA this year. He let go by the Marlins at the start of the year. And the Braves thought he was able to help them in the series. So they said, you know what? We're going to put him on our playoff roster. Excuse me, Parrish.
Sure.
And when they got to Game 4 and wanted to run a bullpen game, they said, you know what? We think he can get some outs for us. Teams are just a lot more willing to say, what are your skill sets? As opposed to, you know, what were your contributions throughout the year, or how much service time do you have, or how much experience do you have? If you can get outs for a team now, they don't care if you've only got 2 or 4 or 10 games in the major leagues.
So on that inexperience for the Astros tonight, it's Luis Garcia on short rest. So it's a 24-year-old rookie pitching on short rest for the first time as a big leaguer. How concerning, if at all, is that?
Not that much. I mean, the track record of starters on short rest in recent years, they tend to pitch roughly at the level of a fourth starter. But most of those guys, of course, are aces to begin with, so you would expect better performance. But you're getting roughly what you'd get if you use your typical fourth starter. At this point in the season, of course, both of these staffs are dealing with a lot of injuries, so they're kind of, you know, faking it through this World Series. In Garcia's case, I'm not that concerned. He had extra rest going into Game 3, only went 3 1/3 innings, didn't throw a ton of pitches, had great velocity, which he also had in his previous start against the Red Sox. I don't think you're putting him on the mound tonight to get 6-7 innings. You're putting him on the mound tonight to get as many outs as you can, throwing that 96-97 that he showed up with the other day, and maybe get 12, 13, 14 outs, and then turn it over to an Astros bullpen that, Gary, has been fantastic in these playoffs and exceptional in the World Series. The Astros are here because their bullpen went out the other night and threw 6 1/3 shutout innings against the Braves. So if Baker can get 9, 12 outs out of Garcia, he'll be thrilled.
So Max Fried's going for Atlanta after a not great performance in Game 2, or at least a not great performance in one inning in Game 2. There's some thought that he was tipping his pitches, maybe. Was he tipping his pitches?
I couldn't see it. I know there was an article at USA Today looking at it. I think you can break these down and decide that a guy's tipping. But to me, if you're tipping your pitches, you should have gotten rocked. And he didn't get rocked the other night, Gary. You talk about that second inning against the Astros. It was a bunch of, you know, 85-mile-an-hour balls off the bat, squib ground balls with eyes, to go back to the Bull Durham reference. He wasn't really hit very hard. So I don't think that performance was about Max Fried tipping pitches. I think that performance was about sometimes, you know, they just hit a bunch of dribblers off you. I think the interesting thing tonight will be, does he go back to his strengths? And I want to credit, you know, Saris of The Athletic for pointing this out. You know, Max Fried's somebody who wants to work up in the zone, power lefty, good velocity, throws a slider. He wants to really get in the kitchen of right-handed hitters. And he wasn't doing that the other night. He was kind of working away, using the curveball, using the low slider a little bit more. I want to see if Fried goes after these Astros hitters and pitches to his strengths as opposed to the Astros hitters' weaknesses. That's, I think, going to be the key tonight. Can he get the fastball by guys like Correa and Gurriel in the early innings?
Talking to Joe Sheehan, he writes the Joe Sheehan newsletter. You can subscribe at joesheehan.com. Framber Valdez has given up, I think, 10 runs and 4.2 innings in this World Series. It's among the reasons Houston finds itself in this 3-2 hole. Are you surprised he's been so ineffective? Is there an explanation for it?
The elevation, really. I mean, this is a guy who throws a lot of breaking ball down in the dirt. He had the best ground ball rate of any pitcher in baseball this year. And against the Braves, he's been getting the ball up. The Braves, again, the Astros have given up 18 runs in this series. Valdez has allowed 10 of them. He, if you want to pick one of the reasons the Astros might not win the World Series, it's because Framber Valdez got the ball up. And you can't do that to this Braves team. There are no soft touches in this Braves lineup. Every guy in this lineup was a 20-homer hitter this year. Every one of these guys can take a bad pitch deep. So when you start elevating, and Valdez has good stuff, but he's not overpowering stuff. I talk about Fried throwing fastballs in the zone. Luis Garcia can get away with throwing his fastball for strikes. Framber Valdez has to get you to swing and miss below the zone, and he hasn't done that in the series. And it's, you know, he's given up, I want to get this right, 22 batted balls in the two starts, 10 of them were hit at 100 miles an hour or greater. Mm-hmm. So he's just getting rocked.
The Braves trailed the Mets in the NL East most of the season. They lose along the way Ronald Acuna, Marcell Ozuna, Mike Soroka, and yet here they are, one win away from a World Series title. Do you have a sense for where the Braves might go down on a list of surprising World Series champs if they go on and win this?
Yeah, I mean, they'll be one of the more surprising ones. If you look at recent years, the last year the Giants won, they were a wild card team that didn't win 90 games. You go back to the Cardinals in 2006, they won 83 games, might have been 82, and won the World Series. Anytime a team comes into the postseason with fewer than 90 wins, they're mad at me. They're coming after me. Anytime a team wins with fewer than 90 wins, we're going to consider them a surprise. But I go back to first principles in the playoffs, Gary. If you're good enough to make the tournament, you're good enough to win the tournament.
The Astros are favored tonight, and I would assume if they win tonight, they'd be favored in a Game 7. This series is not over. So I understand Atlanta is the favorite and should be. They have a 3-2 lead. But if the Astros were to come back and win this World Series by winning two games at home to close it out, would there be any sort of hint of something, because of the past? I know that there's been sort of veiled shots here and there, and obviously other teams' fans have fun with it. I guess this is what I'm asking. If Houston wins this World Series, will everybody agree this is a legitimate championship?
I live in New York, man, and the Astros could win 15 championships in a row. People are still going to be mad about 2017. I feel like it would help them historically to win this World Series. I think it would validate it for a lot of people. Hey, they won one. We know there are people who are always going to think they're cheating, but, you know, I look at the new management there. I look at Dusty Baker. I would have a very hard time believing that this team has some elaborate sign-stealing thing going on. So, yeah, I think for historical purposes, it would help the Astros a lot to win this year. If the only series this team ever wins is the 2017 one, they're always going to go down as, oh, yeah, but that was the year they were cheating. So they need these two games.
Game five ended late. Most of these games have ended late, and this has become a topic of conversation among some observers. But I've noticed how you have pointed out this is nothing new. This is the same time frame World Series games have been ending for 50 years. So could you expand on that thought, why it might be new for people to complain about it on Twitter, because Twitter is still relatively a new thing. Baseball games ending, after midnight on the East Coast is not something that's just been going on for 5 years or 10 years or even 20.
No, the first night game was in 71, and that game ended a little after 11. And it was only a couple of years after that, Gary, that they stopped playing World Series day games during the week because, more people could watch them at night. And if you go through the 40-odd years that we're talking about, pretty much all the games end between 11 and midnight. They used to start them at 8:30. So they moved those back. The start times have been moved back to 8 o'clock in recent years. But, Reggie Jackson's homer was early. But if you look at, Don Zankinger's call in 1985, I was talking about game sixes, that was at 11 o'clock at night. Kirk Gibson's home run was at 11:40. Bill Buckner, the ball went through his glove at about 12:38 a.m. So World Series games ending late is not a new thing. Yeah, as you say, our ability to complain about them is late. I think one of the factors that's legitimate to look at is that it used to be two rounds, right? There'd be the ALCS, some of which was played, the LCS, some of which was played in the daytime, and then there'd be the World Series. And by October 17th, we were all done. And we now have a month of these games. I think that's wearing on fans and media as much as anybody. It feels like this. Speaking as a writer who covers them all, man, it's a lot of late nights over the course of a month. So I think this is backlash is the word, a negative effect of the expanded playoffs combined with the games are longer now. Travis Sawchuk's had some great research this week about, the average postseason game is run about 3.5 hours. The average World Series game is running about 3:45. That's a baseball problem. But it's not because the games are starting too late. It's because the games are taking too long. That's something baseball will probably address this offseason with the introduction of a pitch clock. We'll see how that goes. But just saying the games are ending at 11:45 doesn't actually add anything. And I would add, you get this being in the Central Time Zone, this is mostly an East Coast whining problem. Once you're into the Central Time Zone, the games are ending at 10:30, 11 o'clock. And once you go east of that, it should be west of that, the problem is the games start too early.
Right.
So I don't have a lot. I lived in Los Angeles, in and around Los Angeles, for about 17 years. So I have less sympathy for this than a lot of people. I missed a lot of World Series games when I was in college, working my night job. I was working during Joe Cork, the 15-14 game in 93, and a lot of the Braves-Blue Jays games the year before. So I kind of see it from the perspective not just of an East Coast writer or fan, but as a West Coast writer and fan, and if the game starts at 5 o'clock and you're stuck on the 4:05, you're not catching the first four innings. So the East Coast centricity of this conversation annoys me.
That is Joe Sheehan. He writes the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. If you're not subscribed, you should be subscribed. I'm a subscriber. I read it every day. If you want to be smarter about baseball, you should subscribe as well. You can do it at joesheehan.com. That's joesheehan.com. You're the best, buddy. I always appreciate you being here. Enjoy tonight. I'm going to do my best to do the same.
Thanks, GP. Take care.
All right. That's Joe Sheehan from the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. When we come back, wild story dominating Twitter last night. The pole assassin, who is a, follow me here, Big Bet Bennett.
Okay.
A stripper who is dating a special teams coach at Texas. She took to social media to defend herself against allegations that her pet monkey seriously injured a trick-or-treater on Sunday night. You got all that?
Yeah, I'm following.
She subsequently deleted her social media because, boy, did she bring a lot of, I believe, unwanted attention to her partner, who is a football coach at the University of Texas. A football coach at the University of Texas who is dating the pole assassin.
Yeah, I'm wrapping my mind around it.
Whew. We'll talk about that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows.
Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Okay, now they got me wanna rap again. Heal the wound and then you stab me in my back again. You the type to play the joke and try to hide your hand. Not the type to come around and try to play your friend. You the type to cut the grass and snake your bestest man. I'm the type to close the deal and cut my then. See me in person, I look like a ghost. See me in person, I look like a ghost. Boom. You wanna come in and play with the goat? Boom. You wanna come in and play with the goat?
Goat body.
Are you rap? Sound like me, can't tell who is who. You got no real identity, can't tell you from you. Price went up.
Yeah.
Grizzlies beat the Nuggets last night. John Morant did play, did play well. Nuggets Grizzlies again tomorrow night. And an interesting scheduling philosophy that the NBA adopted last season. Jeff Cargan is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. We'll get back to the Grizz then, but right now I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories at 444. Brought to you by Delta Dental of Tennessee. Covering your smile. Four notable stories at 444. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 444. Story number one.
A pet monkey belonging to the girlfriend of Texas special teams coach Jeff Banks is being accused of attacking a young trick-or-treater, but the girlfriend, who is a stripper, named the pole assassin, says it was all the kid's fault. Lot going on.
Let's just start with the pole assassin is hands down the greatest stripper name of all time. Like, you shut it down after that.
I mean, whatever happened to, like, Chastity or something?
Yeah, the pole assassin is like, that is the GOAT name. Like anyone who's trying to think of a stripper name, just look at that one, and that's the bar right
when
there.
When I grew up, the strippers were like Charity and...
Yeah.
What are other great stripper names?
I don't really know.
Roxanne.
Yeah.
I ain't never heard of no pole assassin.
Nah.
That's a new one. I mean, you ever been in a strip club and, like, you know, you might be paying attention, you might not be paying attention. They welcome somebody to stage. You don't even blink.
Yeah.
But if they ever said, now welcome to the stage, the pole assassin.
What?
That's getting my attention every time.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't care what I'm doing, who I'm talking to. We're going to have to pause it for a second so I can check out the pole assassin.
Yep.
Woo, boy, what a name. I did check out the pole assassin earlier today, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
She was on Jerry Springer once upon a time.
I saw, yes.
And Jerry Springer.
She is assassinating that pole. There's no doubt about it.
She's assassinating that pole. They described her as the greatest pole dancer of all time. And I'm not certain I can label her that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's taking it a little too far, probably.
Well, obviously, it's subjective.
Yeah.
You know? Have you really seen every pole dancer?
No.
And, I mean, it's been a while, but I feel like I've seen better than the pole assassin.
It's been a while here, too.
Just because she named herself the pole assassin doesn't automatically make her the greatest pole dancer of all time. But she knows what she's doing.
She does.
I just don't know if she's the greatest, right?
I don't think she's the greatest.
I don't think she didn't look like the greatest to me. Just she looked aggressive.
Yeah.
But maybe not the greatest.
Right.
So anyway, at some point, Jeff Banks, formerly an employee at the University of Alabama, then went with Steve Sarkisian to Texas. At some point, he meets the pole assassin and falls in love. Let's stop here for a second. Where do you even meet the pole assassin? Does that have to happen in a club, or can you do it over social media, or maybe just like, at the outlet mall?
I would think likely at the club. I mean, I'm just...
I'd like to know where he met the pole assassin.
I mean, come on.
Probably the club,
yeah.
That can't be the best place to start a relationship, can it?
Maybe not, but I mean, it seems like they got a cool little lifestyle going on. They got like some exotic animals and stuff. Like, that's cool.
Probably got a pole in the house.
There's probably a pole in the house.
You can't be the pole assassin and not have a equipment to practice on at home.
It sounds like
even I got a putting green.
Right. It sounds like they throw really cool like trick or treat themed parties. I'd
like to be good at golf someday, so I've got a putting green in my home.
Right.
And I'm in the market for a golf simulator
because
I'd like to be better at this thing. If you're the pole assassin, you can't not have a pole in your house.
No, you have to have one.
It'd be like a Damian Lillard not having a basketball goal at his house.
Right.
Although lately it looks like he might not.
No, he might not.
So they probably got a pole in the house. They definitely got a monkey.
Mm-hmm.
That alone sounds pretty fun.
That is kind of cool. Yeah, that's a good start.
It's not boring at the very least. Like probably not too many boring days at the Jeff Banks pole assassin estate. So this guy, Jeff Banks, he meets the pole assassin somewhere. And it appears he was married, had a whole family and everything, and decided to leave his family for the pole assassin.
Oh, Jeff.
Now, people make bad decisions all the time. I can't sit here and tell you I've never made a bad decision. But leaving your family for the pole assassin? And her pet monkey?
Yeah, like, I don't know the pole assassin personally, but, I mean, come on, dude. You had a nice family.
How about this be the rule? If you're going to leave your family, just make sure it's not for somebody named the pole assassin who also has a pet monkey.
Yeah.
All right?
Well, that's
a pretty low standard.
Reasonable.
Like, if you want to leave your family for whatever other reason you might leave your family, I'm willing to listen. But for the pole assassin and her pet monkey, that seems misguided.
Mm.
That seems like something that's going to end up being deemed regrettable.
Evidence being this story, possibly.
So the pole assassin and Jeff Banks, they live together now.
Yep.
In the Austin area. And they decided they'd have a little, maze, haunted house type thing at their home for the local trick-or-treaters, which is nice, by the way.
Very nice. Like, that's cool.
Like, the pole assassin jumped on social media and was like, hey, bring your little kids over. We got a little maze. It's going to be open from this time to that time. We got candy, too. That's nice.
Yeah.
I didn't do that for...
I didn't either.
I don't want a bunch of little kids going through a maze at my house. I mean, if you knock on the door, I'll put some candy in your bag, but that's about as far as I'm going to go with it. So I give the pole assassin credit for trying to provide a source of entertainment for the local trick-or-treaters. But, it took a terrible turn.
Yeah, it did.
Because turns out there's a monkey cage in the back. And a little trick-or-treater made his or her way to the monkey cage. And the monkey reportedly attacked this child and injured it, a young trick-or-treater. And faced with these allegations, that somehow kid got mauled by a monkey at a Texas football coach's house, which is outrageous. Pole assassin jumped on social media to say, hold up. I gave kids the opportunity to go through a maze to get some candy to participate in a haunted house. Kids can't just walk to my monkey cage. Nobody's supposed to be back there by the monkey cage. So if you get back there by the monkey cage, you get what you get. That's not my fault. And on this very specific point, Big Bet Bennett, I side with the pole assassin.
I do too, 100%. She even mentions that there's signage up that says, do not go past this point and don't mess with the animals. And that kid stuck his finger in the monkey cage and got bit.
You get what you get, I think.
You get what you get. That's a life lesson right there.
Yeah. Don't stick your hand in a monkey cage.
No. We were at the pumpkin patch last weekend, and Noah, he kept trying to stick his finger in the cage with the chickens, and they started snapping at him, and I was like, you better, they're going to bite you.
You want to lose a finger?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can actually lose a finger to a chicken, but you can still say it. You want to lose a finger? This is on the kid. This whole thing is created by the kid. But the byproduct of that is this Jeff Banks character has had his entire personal life brought to the forefront of the national conversation. This dude and his pole assassin and that monkey were trending on Twitter last night. I didn't know Jeff Banks existed this time yesterday. I wouldn't know this guy from anybody.
Right.
And now I'll never forget him. He's the football coach who left his family for the pole assassin and the pet monkey.
Yeah.
This is a career ruiner, or at least it's an embarrassment that could cause issues within your career. Because maybe you're real tight with Steve Sarkisian, so he's just going to hold on to you no matter what. But, like, if you had aspirations to be a head college football coach, and I'm sure he did, that's got to be over now. If only because what university wants to be the university to hire the assistant coach who left his family for the pole assassin and her pet monkey?
Yeah. No, it's true. Did you see the video of the monkey gate?
I have not watched the video of the monkey.
I mean, that kid had to walk pretty far to get to that monkey cage.
The kid got what it deserved.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if one of my kids walked back there and got bit by the pole assassin's monkey, I'd check on him first.
Yeah.
You know, are you okay? Yeah. Do we need to go to the hospital?
Probably need to get a tetanus shot or something.
But after that, I'd be like, what were you doing at the monkey cage?
Mm-hmm.
We told you don't go near the monkey cage.
Don't go near the monkey cage. That's a cute monkey, by the way. I'm looking at the pictures.
I mean, aren't all monkeys kind of cute?
They're all, yeah, I think so. I think that's universal, yeah.
Yeah, puppies are cute, too. Just get a puppy, not a monkey.
Yeah.
You're not gonna be...
'cause I've heard stories about, like, monkeys killing people. The pet monkeys killing their owners.
Where have you heard about these stories?
Dude, it's happened. There was, like, one with a chimpanzee. It, like, ripped this lady's face off.
Ripped her face off?
Yes. I'm telling you. That's a true story.
Imagine having a pet that ripped your face off.
I know. It might have been a friend whose face got ripped off. I don't know if it was the owner.
Imagine being friends with somebody who has a pet who would rip your face off.
There was a face ripped off by a pet chimpanzee in this country.
I'm not trying to discriminate, but I would not be friends with anybody who has a pet monkey, I don't think.
I probably could.
Especially not Michael Jackson.
Right, yeah.
You know?
What was that monkey's name? He had a chimpanzee. What was his name?
I don't know.
I'll find it out.
Yeah, I wouldn't run in those circles, as they say. So, this poor Jeff Banks guy, like when you, he just seems like he's made some bad decisions.
Yeah.
And they were mostly private bad decisions, but boy, they went public last night. Once the world finds out you are dating the pole assassin, it's pretty much over for you. I don't care how good Texas special teams are. Nobody's going to talk about that ever again. You were just the dude who's dating the pole assassin and her pet monkey.
Bubbles was Michael's monkey.
Of course, Bubbles.
Bubbles, yeah.
Wonder if Bubbles is still with us.
I doubt it. I don't think they lived that long. I mean, he had Bubbles, I think, in the 80s.
You think Bubbles outlived Michael?
Yeah, he had Bubbles in the 80s. There's no way Bubbles is alive.
You don't know the life expectancy on a chimpanzee.
You know what?
Hmm.
I think Bubbles is still alive.
Where do you think he is?
It says that monkey is 35 years. I'm the same age as Bubbles. I'm the same age as Bubbles. I'll be 35 in December.
You and Bubbles grew up together.
I remember Bubbles.
What in the world? What a world, you know?
Yeah.
How did Michael Jackson's pet monkey outlive Michael Jackson?
I don't know.
I mean, what in the world? You know how stupid that is?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Everything about all of this is just dumb.
Yeah.
Story number two.
College football playoff rankings will be unveiled tonight. I don't have much to say about it. It seems pretty clear Georgia's going to be one, Michigan State's going to be two. And then after that, the debate begins. Cincinnati in the top four or not? Because we have experts with different opinions. Jerry Palm says, no way, Jose. Heather Dennett says, yes, Cincinnati will be fourth.
I'll say no, just because history suggests they probably won't be.
History certainly does suggest that.
Yeah.
No Group of Five team has ever been higher than seventh. So anything better than that would be historic for the Cincinnati Bearcats. Here's the truth. It doesn't matter what happens tonight. Cincinnati is only getting in the college football playoff if it goes undefeated and if enough teams lose. Even teams that might be below them tonight, because these power conferences.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.